Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hey, listeners, Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, registered dietitian, sports dietitian, and your host of the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I've got a great guest for you today, Lexi Cole. We're going to focus this conversation around culinary nutrition. I really enjoyed this conversation just about getting in the kitchen and really understanding that learning how to cook takes practice. It's one thing to learn how to fuel and to learn nutrition, and it's another thing to cook. It's a skill that we need to learn. And I think maybe one step further, what we specialize in is the sports nutrition piece, understanding how to fuel on top of that. So before we get to the conversation with Lexi about diving into culinary nutrition, if you are a coach, I want you to listen up. If you aren't aware, if your team is still struggling with just understanding sports nutrition, maybe they are training really hard and you're proud of their physical abilities, but, you know, 5 minutes before the gun goes off or the game's about to start, your top athlete is just eating hot Cheetos on the sidelines and then complaining about heartburn. And, you know, another athlete is running off to the bathroom because their lunch didn't settle well. And then another athlete's like never even ate lunch at all and is exhausted. You know, these are the types of sports nutrition knowledge and fundamental skills of fueling that so many athletes, especially youth athletes, just don't know. And you as a coach can do your best, I'm sure you are, in teaching them, but sometimes you need a little more help and some resources at your fingertips. So if you aren't aware, I have that for you. It's called the Sports Nutrition Team Toolkit. You can head to riseupnutritionrun.com/team toolkit. Learn more about it and get access right now with a one-time payment. What it is three video presentations, not just for you, for your team that you can present to your team. Three video presentations, 12 athlete handouts to understand a sample day of fueling or high iron, high protein, good pre and post workout fuel guides, and also 17 athlete recipes that are ideal for most likely the high school or college athlete, things that are easy to make for a novice cook, somebody not comfortable in the kitchen, somebody living out of a dorm room. So this is an amazing product that is lifetime access. Once you gain access to this for your team, you can reuse it year after year as new members join your team. And it's just that fundamental nutrition, sports nutrition knowledge that every athlete and every team needs. So head to riseupnutritionrun.com/team toolkit. And if you have any questions, you can always email me, Lindsay, lindsey.riseupnutrition@gmail.com. And I can tell you more about this. So just as important as it is for your athletes to learn fundamental sports nutrition, we then have to translate this sometimes into the kitchen and get comfortable cooking and chopping and making a sauce. And that's what Lexi and I dive into on today's episode. So let's kick off by reading her bio and then you'll hear from her. Lexi Cole is a culinary nutrition specialist and community engagement strategist at Two Taste. She is a registered dietitian and certified culinary medicine specialist. She received her Bachelor of Science in Coordinated Dietetics from Texas Christian University. She began her nutrition career with Two Taste as a senior in college and has been there ever since. Lexi has also worked as a culinary medicine consultant, private nutrition counselor, and assistant cross-country coach. Lexi is currently pursuing two master's degrees at Tufts University, Master of Science agriculture, food, and environment, and Master of Public Health in Health Services Management and Policy. She expects to graduate in December of 2024. Lexi believes that eating healthfully should be enjoyable, sustainable, and fulfilling. Choosing plant-forward and minimally processed foods is the best way that we can ensure that the food we put in our body maintain our health. Learning basic culinary skills can help us along the path to health and is a fantastic tool to take us throughout our entire lives. Outside of cooking and teaching, Lexi's passions include running long distances, reading, listening to podcasts, playing the cello, and exploring coffee shops around Boston. So there are many reasons why I hope you will find this conversation enjoyable, from the fact that Lexi herself is a runner to the fact that she is specializing in helping people not just fuel their bodies with nutrition, but do so through the art of cooking and the skill of cooking. And I think that the company To Taste has a really wonderful mission. And please head to their website, totaste.com, and learn more or see if you can benefit from some of their services or their online courses. Enjoy. Lexi, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. And I'm excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat all things culinary, nutrition, and food and sports. So yeah, let's dive into it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot we have in common. And I just want to be upfront too that, you know, I found you, or I might even say you guys, you found us with, you know, your company that you work for right now, To Taste. And I just kind of want to chat about that first, and we'll kind of dive into more of what that means to you as a dietitian, somebody who loves food. But can you just tell us, like, what is To Taste and what is the mission of the work that's being done there?
Yeah, so To Taste is a culinary nutrition consulting company. We are a team of registered dietitians, chefs, and culinary medicine specialists, and we're nationally recognized as food and nutrition experts. So we have Chef Fahis Usri and Chef Lindsay Schoenfeld. They founded the company back in 2015. Both of them had experience working in school food nutrition, but then we're just seeing this disconnect between what a lot of their friends were saying in terms of what their doctors were telling them what to eat, but then how to make that applicable in their own lives. Mm-hmm. And so after attending the Healthy Kitchens, Healthy Lives conference, Chef Lindsay and Chef Fahista looked at each other and said, we need to be a part of this solution. We need to be able to help translate medical advice into delicious, nourishing food. And so that's how To Taste was born. And so now we're on a mission to help people cook confidently, simplify nutrition, and feel better, because we truly believe that anyone can cook. It just takes some skill building to get there.
I agree completely. And I think there's such a need for that, right? There's a gap. You come home from the doctor's office, or you read something online or whatever, and it's like, oh, you need to eat more vegetables or try to incorporate more protein. And you go home and you look at your pantry and it's like, where do I begin? Or you go to the store and you actually get some of those ingredients, which you first have to be educated on what ingredients and foods to buy, and you bring them home and you don't know what to do with them. Or, gosh forbid, you eat it and then you don't like it. And then you're turned off from that. And you think, I can't do this anymore. Or I don't want to do it because it doesn't taste good.
Right.
And then you're turned off from the whole experience of trying to improve your health or wellness. So I absolutely see such a huge need for that. And it's interesting, the background too, you mentioned of the founders of the company. I think you mentioned worked in like more school nutrition at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a huge gap for that. And I was just putting this in perspective to sports nutrition when I worked at universities as a sports dietitian. And this varied based on which university I was at. I've worked at three different, and they all had very different situations. But at one of them in particular, it was like, okay, I could consult with my athlete about what to eat, but then the dining hall facility didn't have those foods available or made it very difficult to get that. And then they're living out of a dorm room with microwaves. Like, the practical application was very difficult and very challenging.
Yeah, totally. I think it's very easy to get the information of what we need to eat, but the application is really this huge missing link. And it's an opportunity for dietitians and chefs kind of at this intersection to teach people how to not only make food, but make it to use a term from one of my favorite nutrition scientists, unapologetically delicious. Yeah. Like we talk a lot at Two Taste about how tired we get of the standard healthy plate. It's steamed broccoli and plain brown rice and baked chicken. Mm-hmm. And sure, that might work for some people who really don't care about flavor.
Some people.
But for most people, we care a lot about taste. And so if that is the vision you have of what a healthy plate is, that's going to get really boring really fast, and mm-hmm. it's going to burn people out or make them less enthusiastic about cooking healthfully for their whole lives.
Totally.
So we really seek to implement our culinary expertise in a way that's also approachable to everyday people. I think it's easy to think of chefs in the culinary world as this very fancy, gourmet, time-consuming process. But because of our culinary expertise, we really can boil down the basics of what it takes to make healthy food taste good. And it doesn't have to be complicated, and it doesn't have to take a lot of time. It just takes some basic fundamental skills.
Yeah. And just like I feel, you know, here in America, I will only speak for us, you know, we're not even getting good nutrition education as young adults and kids. And then the culinary education, yeah, like I think in sixth grade, I had a home ec class. And the biggest thing I remember from that is like the poor kid like smashed an egg on the ground.
Yeah.
So like maybe I did learn how to properly crack an egg or how to at least not do it improperly right. in sixth grade. But beyond that, I learned cooking from my mother, and I'm super grateful to her for that. But, you know, we don't all have that. We also live in a society where very often both parents are working quite a bit. And like, I just don't think the skill of cooking is being passed down as much as it used to. And people, yeah, it's a huge issue, I think, that people don't know how to cook, or at least they don't know how to cook confidently or cook good food. It's like, okay, maybe I do know how to boil pasta. Awesome. But that's getting boring. So I'm going to choose to go out to eat or choose this other thing just because I'm, yeah, flavor fatigued is one of my favorite phrases to use.
Yeah.
When people like aren't interested in eating anymore because they're flavor fatigued. It's like, I don't want that flavor anymore. Sick of it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And then they're not nourishing.
Right. I see that concept a lot in endurance sports, like during an event is the flavor fatigue, but it can definitely happen in all of our lives as well. If you've made plain scrambled eggs every morning for the last month and didn't heat your pan properly or didn't add salt at the right time, you're going to get really tired of scrambled eggs.
Yeah. One of my conversations with a client recently was about her oatmeal in the morning, just like so bored with it. And it's like, she was literally just doing like oatmeal and cinnamon. I was like, yeah, that's wicked boring. Like, I wouldn't eat that either. You know, like,
no, me either.
We gotta do so. I make like my favorite oatmeal is, I call it carrot cake oatmeal because mm-hmm. I like make it taste like carrot cake. So
yeah, I get so excited about my morning bowl of oatmeal because it's never the same.
It's never
because
the same.
Once you learn those cooking skills and learn ratios of how to put ingredients together, you can really tweak and modify recipes to your taste. That's part of what we focus on. Is we have hundreds of recipes on our website, but the whole concept behind our recipes is this base recipe concept. So teaching people the base of a recipe. So overnight oats, because we're talking about oats, is one of our favorites to go to. And so we give people the base, which is the ratios and the fundamental ingredients to make it taste good on its own.
Yeah.
And then we provide options for substitutions or toppings or garnishes mm-hmm. or mix-ins so that someone can adjust a recipe to their taste. That's why we're called To Taste.
Right.
Because eating is so personal and it should be fun and it should be a creative activity. And so if you want to make carrot cake overnight oats, or if you want to make blueberry overnight oats or apple pie overnight oats, you can do it all off of one recipe just by tweaking individual ingredients. And it just opens up a world of opportunity for eating well.
It so does. And over here as a sports dietitian, we very often
preach to our clients like a performance plate of kind of building, okay, this is, you know, how many carbohydrates, protein, color, and fats you might need. But as you were just giving that example, I'm like, oh yeah, like, you know, here's your, here's how to make a chicken pasta vegetable dish. But now, do you want it Mediterranean inspired? Do you want it with a cream sauce? Do you want it marinara, Italian? Like, there's, do you want the chicken like whole or diced up? Like, there's just, and now you've got 20 completely different meals that are still that kind of base recipe of we're cooking chicken and pasta tonight. And it's also still that base nutrition, like performance plate of like you're getting the carb, protein, color, and fat that you need to. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I love that.
So I'm just like we're both nodding at each other, like, yes, 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 because we get it. But there's still some people that like that just don't, okay, but how do I do that? Teach me. And so that's where Two Tastes comes in. Can you tell us more about like the specifics of like, because you said you're more of a consulting agency. Like, do you go to workplaces? Do you work one-on-one with people? How do you deliver this help?
Yeah, yeah. That's a great question. So we have two primary audiences. So we have our online audience, and that is who we target our recipes towards. We write articles. We have a one-of-a-kind meal plan on our website for individuals. We've had so many people ask us, will you just make me a meal plan? Well, the thing we have experienced with either making people meal plans or watching people follow other meal plans is that they don't really work very well.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
It just doesn't
work.
I'm
on the same page as you. I'm like, I hate making meal plans and I rarely do it because it just, you think you want a meal plan, but you don't.
You don't.
A week from now,
yeah,
I'm going to have done all that work and you didn't do anything with it.
And so we made this meal plan with the goal of teaching people along the way to, one, make these recipes and to make their own meal plan. So there are videos embedded in the meal plan of how to make the recipe and the nutrition facts behind all of the recipes so that people can get something out of the meal plan rather than here's a sheet, here's your grocery list, have fun, bye.
Right. It's a learning tool. They're learning.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So we have that for our online audience. We have a knife skills course because we believe that knife skills are one of the most fundamental skills to hone, to use that pun, in order to be successful in the kitchen. If you're trying to increase the amount of produce that you're eating, the amount of color that you're eating, you really need to know how to slice and dice so that you're removing that barrier for yourself.
Yeah.
So that's primarily what we work on our online side. And then we do consult with businesses and organizations and schools and food companies. And we do curriculum development and create and test recipes. So we have these two separate entities for, or audiences for two separate purposes, but all with a goal of helping people enjoy flavorful, nourishing foods to their taste.
Absolutely. Yeah, I see it working. And like, I don't know, I can just totally see how successful it would be to bring you guys into like a company or an organization or some sort of event and have you guys like host, you know, an event for people to learn and engage. But I'm super excited about that knife skills course online that you mentioned. That is so needed. I think going back to one of my jobs, I worked at the University of Georgia. And at that university, we actually did work closely with the dining halls. And during my time there, we had a couple of the teams that we would do cooking classes once a semester. So like with the golf teams, with the volleyball teams, like we did cooking classes and we linked up with the chefs there. And so it was like, okay, I came up with the menu and talked about the nutrition importance of these ingredients. And the chef was there to actually teach us, this is how you cut an onion. And I remember that specifically because even though I was the like employee there who's supposed to know what I was doing, up until that point in my life, did not know how to properly cut an onion. And many people listening to this right now might be thinking, yeah, those onions are hard. Like, which end do you start at? And like, you know, and then something that's round can be dangerous when you're cutting it. And there's all these different shaped knives and which ones are best for what. And I also just have to tell you one other quick thing about knives. Just this past month, it was, you know, 2024 came around and I told my husband, I said, I cannot take it with these knives anymore because they were just so dull. It didn't matter how many times we sharpened them. They just like, and it gets dangerous when your knives aren't good. So we invested in a better knife set and life the past month has been so much easier cooking dinner. And because it's like, it's easier, it's safer, and it's like enjoyable. Are you like me that like cutting and chopping can kind of be like a therapeutic process sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. That is how I got through undergrad was if I had a stressful day, even if I had a ton of homework to do, if I just needed to unwind, I would dice and mince like crazy. It's so satisfying.
I agree.
And a sharp knife makes all the difference.
Totally. Absolutely. It's just, it is. And this is like, I love talking to other people who share this interest in mine because hopefully we can instill this passion in somebody else some people might be resentful towards cooking or like, oh, it takes so much time or it takes effort. And it's like, this can be you time. This can be self-care. This, I'm telling you, chopping a carrot. Mm-hmm. If you got any level of anger or stress going on, like, go chop a carrot.
It's so true. Well, and I can't tell you how many times we've been leading these cooking demonstrations and one of us has been showing the audience how to slice a bell pepper because those can be really obnoxious. You know, all the seeds in the middle.
Yes.
And this method that we have for slicing a bell pepper, very simple. And the number of people that come up to us afterwards and are like, that was life-changing. Like, it's a bell pepper.
Yeah.
But it can be life-changing. Mm-hmm. And just these little skills that can instill some confidence in someone truly can change their lives.
Yes.
So it's always very gratifying to receive those comments. Or Chef V, when she is mincing garlic, that one, I still am not at her level of mincing garlic, but that's another skill too, where we can teach people how to get rid of what chefs call the jarlic, the pre-mint stuff, which I get it for its convenience.
Yeah.
But again, if we're really going for flavor,
the fresh garlic.
Fresh is best.
It is, yeah. And also the jarlic, every time you open the fridge, you get a whiff of garlic smell, which I never enjoyed personally.
No.
But yeah, actually the garlic, that's another huge one too. I think I was working as an intern and I was doing like a demonstration and I was only an intern, so I was still young in my career. But then like somebody who was like watching my demonstration was like, I have an easier way for you to do garlic right now.
Totally.
Like, yeah, we just don't learn these things. It is so important. So I think, and also I do have an audience. Actually, my audience is pretty wide range, but being athletes, I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm like, no, I've got a great age range of listeners here, but we do get a lot of high school and college age listeners who probably like that might be their first time, like, oh, you know, mom and dad have been cooking or providing food for me for years. And so like I would strongly encourage them to head to your website and go to that knife skills course to learn, because I think that would be really, really important as any young adult is starting to take care of themselves and cook on their own in their first apartment or something like that. Like, yeah, you get the cutting down, you get the knife safety down, and you'll feel a lot more confident in the kitchen.
Totally. And to all those high school and college athletes or students, this is a good you time therapy. Take a break from the books or screen. Mm-hmm. Just go chop a carrot.
Go chop a carrot. Put some music on, put a podcast on, or just get in your own head.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of my first clients when I started a private practice was somebody who really resented cooking because she just had such a bad relationship with food. And by the end of our time together, cooking was her self-care. And I just thought that was so beautiful. And it was like connect her and her husband did it together. It was connection time. And it was just like, this is such an, if you can get a little bit of confidence in the kitchen, it can give you back so much more than just nutrition.
Absolutely. I love that. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. So I want to learn more about you, Lexi, as well, and how like kind of how you got involved in Two Taste or kind of your career journey to becoming a dietitian, and not just a dietitian, but one who really loved the culinary side of things.
Yeah. So one thing I learned to appreciate in my undergraduate education was that we all have a food story. food is something that's with us from birth till now. And so it has these important turning points in our lives. And I have a mix of a food and nutrition story. So growing up, I remember as an elementary school student, when I was eating my cereal, and it was probably Honey Bunches of Oats with almonds, because that's what I loved. I remember turning around the cereal box and being fascinated by the nutrition facts label and reading down this list and being interested by, oh, what is this thing called zinc and fiber and protein? And I wasn't like making connections about it, but I was just very aware that it was there. And so that's, I think, where my interest in nutrition started. And then with food, on Sunday evenings, I was my dad's sous chef in the kitchen.
Aww.
And he would lead and I would probably just chop stuff and hand him pans and mix things in bowls. But I was his little sous chef. And then also growing up, I had younger sisters that I would often babysit. And I remember we'd have movie nights and I would make special snacks for the movie nights. And so I would slice up apples and carrots and popcorn and cheese cubes. And I think that was an early sign of my expression of love through food. Mm-hmm. And so that's a bit on the food side. And then through middle school and high school, I ran cross country. And I remember my junior year of high school, we had one of our coaches, he talked to us about nutrition and the importance of iron for female athletes and the importance of carbohydrates and fats and proteins and how those help you recover and perform. And I was just like, yes, this is awesome. And I wrote on my little handout, carbs plus fat plus protein equals smiley face.
Aww.
And that was my turning point. That was when I decided I'm going to go study nutrition. Mm-hmm. I want to commit my life to this pursuit of this specific knowledge. And so I went to TCU down in Fort Worth, Texas, to study dietetics. And I never strayed from that path. I know a lot of students like go to college and try to figure it out, which is great. But I was like, I want to be a dietitian. No questions asked. And then my junior year of college, I was at a Student Nutrition Association lunch, and Chef Fajista, Chef V, she was speaking to our cohort, because she was also a TCU alum, mm-hmm. and she is an alum, mm-hmm. and she was talking about her new company, Two Taste, and I was like, this is super cool. I had done a culinary medicine internship rotation the semester prior, and that just reaffirmed, whoa, I really love this intersection of culinary and nutrition and culinary and medicine. And so I approached Vista afterwards. I was like, I think what you're doing is awesome. I'd love to get in touch and see if there's a way that I can work with you. And I still had another year of my education, but I kind of informally interned with her for the next year. I did stuff for their social media and for their website and photography. And then after I graduated, I came on full time for Two Taste.
Oh, amazing.
And then in that year after, I got a certification in culinary medicine, really just to reaffirm my knowledge about culinary. And then, so that was back in 2019 that I joined. And then about a year later, I decided that I wanted more education on the food policy side. So I'm now finishing my graduate degree at Tufts University in public health and sustainable agriculture.
Mm.
So that's a bit of my journey through food and nutrition over the years.
I love that. Yeah. And just, you know, that general interest in food, the expression of food as a way to show love and care, to then, yeah, being exposed to the company and just, you know, studying it and knowing this is what I want to do. I can honestly say that prior to this conversation, I don't think I've ever heard the term culinary medicine before.
Oh, that's interesting.
Can you tell me a bit more? Like, my brain can only imagine is taking food ingredients as medicine, but like, I've truly never heard that phrase before. Can you expand upon it?
Yeah. So culinary medicine is essentially the application of food is medicine concept, so using food to prevent, treat, and manage disease mm-hmm. in a kitchen setting. So culinary medicine has a bit more to do with the clinical side. So this would have to do with if someone comes in to a physician's office and they have a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes or prediabetes or hypertension, a culinary medicine approach can be utilized to address that disease through more of a lifestyle modification. It may be in conjunction with medication, but together. So culinary medicine is more so on the medicine healthcare side, yeah. Whereas culinary nutrition is a little bit more on the dietetics side.
Yeah.
And may have less to do with a specific disease state. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of research being done right now on culinary medicine interventions. It's definitely a growing field in conjunction with food as medicine or food as medicine.
Yeah.
That's gaining a lot of momentum right now. But the culinary bit is the actual hands-on application of, okay, you have this diagnosis or you're at risk for this disease. How can we address this through food and with the appropriate skills?
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, the term nutritional medicine or, you know, nutrition as medicine, like that I'm totally comfortable with, but it's the hands-on practical approach. And that's exactly where this conversation started is there's that gap of, okay, we know nutrition can be medicine. And yet, how do I make a meal
right,
with those exactly. ingredients? And so I love that. And then, so super interesting to hear about your path now getting more into like agriculture and sustainability. And I think that's another thing when we think about cooking and probably the mission of To Taste as well. I can only imagine that this is important to you guys. And I kind of want to say as a little bit of a disclaimer and be very interested to hear what you think, but I want to hear about your perspectives on sustainability. And I also kind of want to encourage for the newbie person in the kitchen to not stress about like the big level of stuff like sustainability to just yet and like learn how to cut an onion and like stick right, to the right. basics, right? And I only say that because I have had a lot of clients that get so worked up about like sustainability and doing things right and like cost and effort that they like they get paralysis in the kitchen and then they don't eat. Like, wait a second, yeah. Baby steps here, you know? I don't know if that makes sense and maybe I jumped the gun there, but can you tell us more about what does sustainability in the kitchen mean and why is it important?
That is such a good question. And I have been there myself where I'm like, oh my gosh, everything has an impact. And what do I even eat? And that can be really overwhelming. And especially when it comes to the food system and nutrition, there are so many trade-offs that we make.
Yeah.
And the first thing to say is that we all just have to do the best we can with what we have. And so when it comes to sustainability, first of all, it's not really the first thing that people think about when they're making food. Taste no. is the most important factor for all of us, and we have to start there.
Yeah.
But sustainability is increasingly becoming more important in our food choices. We want to ensure that future generations, our children and grandchildren, have the same resources that we do today. But as you mentioned, kind of at the macro level, we can't solve everything in our kitchens. A lot of that impetus is on the major agriculture and food companies to change their procurement yeah. and production practices. But we as consumers can, in a way, influence them by shifting our demand for certain foods.
Sure.
And so because this is a very hairy, scary, complicated problem or issue to address, I'm just going to boil it down to two tips for eating sustainably. There's obviously way more than this. And if you want to learn more, we have an article with our top 10 tips on our website. But our top two tips, wow, say that five times fast, are to eat more plants and to eat your leftovers. So I'm going to repeat those and then I can go into
beautiful.
I can go into more details on both of those. But yeah. those are eat more plants and eat your leftovers.
Yeah.
So when I say eat more plants, this is really to encourage a plant-forward diet. Mm-hmm. So a plant-forward diet, not only is it going to be one of the most nutritionally balanced ways of eating, the most health-promoting from a longevity and disease prevention standpoint, but it's also going to be a planet-friendly diet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to learn more about planetary health diets. If you look up the Eat Lancet report, it's this huge document of what a planetary health diet means. But essentially, it's an eating pattern that has the lowest environmental impact that the most people could follow. Mm-hmm. So a plant-forward diet, really all that that means is that the majority of your nutrients are coming from beans or legumes, whole grains, nuts, seeds, fruits, vegetables, healthy fats and oils. And then by filling up your plate with those things, it naturally makes less room for animal products, which we know have a larger impact on the environment. This isn't to say that you can't ever have animal products, right. You have to be vegetarian or vegan. It's no. Just that the majority of your plate should be these colorful plant foods.
Yeah. And no, I love how you've simplified your two tips, and we'll get into the second one soon. But it makes a lot of sense. It's, you know, has the biggest impact and it's accessible to everybody. And then I'm even thinking from the sports nutrition side of things, like, you know, our biggest, what we need the most of is carbohydrate, and you get that in your plant-based foods. And I want to double tap on what you said of plant-based foods are, you know, beans, legumes, wheat, you know, and your fruits and vegetables. So many people think plants, I need to just eat salad all the time. And it's like, no, like as an athlete, you need carbohydrates. Fill up that plate with your beans and your pasta. Those are plant-based foods. And getting more fats and more calorically dense foods from those nuts and oils, plant-based foods once again. And I think too, I do eat meat, so this is not a no-meat preach here, but even the nutrition and sports nutrition guidelines, the importance of protein, we need protein. You'll be surprised at how much protein you can get from those plant-based foods
if
you are focusing on incorporating a variety of plants.
Yeah, that's so true. And I also am an endurance athlete, and so I focus a lot on ensuring that I get enough carbohydrates and protein. And like you said, you really can get most everything that you need from plants. And then animal products can certainly have a place in terms of adding important iron or omega-3s or healthy sources of fats or even just a concentrated source of protein.
Yeah.
One advantage of shifting towards a plant-forward diet is that when the majority of your plate is plants and you're eating less meat, if you have the ability, it kind of makes more space in your budget to purchase the higher quality, more environmentally friendly animal options. Mm. So if people are price sensitive, a plant-forward diet can also accommodate that as well.
I totally agree. When you were talking about like the reason people, like how sustainability isn't on the top of people's list for, you know, what they choose to buy and eat, it's like, yeah, it's probably taste first, and then it comes into convenience and budget are probably two big factors there too. And so many people think that eating well is very expensive, and it's like, no, just, I mean, celery is just like so dirt cheap. Plant and a box of pasta and beans, my goodness, it's like a can of beans is so cheap. And then if you want to go one step further and get dry beans, like it will be the cheapest thing you've bought the entire year.
Exactly. Yep. That is the hill I will die on. My personal life motto is beans is how. That is my answer to anything. If you want to live long, if you want beans. To have good gut health, if you want to follow a planet-friendly diet, beans is how.
I feel like I'm always saying, like, there's no such thing as a superfood, except beans are, like, pretty amazing.
Yep. We've used that one, too.
So funny. But I love that tip too of like, then when you are going to buy meat or dairy, you can maybe get a quality or a brand that is, you know, something that you are in agreement with ethically, sustainably, whatever, or even just nutritionally, that higher quality meat that might even provide a better quality nutrition for you. So I love that, thinking about it from a budget sustainability. And it's also like, oh, this isn't just good for the environment and future generations. It's good for me too and my budget and my health to go forward this way.
Exactly. And really just thinking about it that way, thinking about following a plant-forward diet, by proxy, you are going to be following a more sustainable diet. So you don't even have to think about like, what are all the costs and benefits and everything about you know, eating for the planet, you can just follow a plant-forward diet.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Okay. And then tip number two was to eat leftovers. I'm a big leftover person, but I was raised that way, but also my husband is not a leftover person. And so I eat all the leftovers because I have to do the work of two people, which I'm happy about because personally, sometimes I think leftovers taste better. It's like all the flavors have like soaked in and marinated for 24 hours. I'm like, this is better the second time around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's actually a chemistry reason that happens is that, yeah, leftovers taste better the second day. I don't know the exact science behind it, but it is true that leftovers are just that much better. But this is a little bit beyond leftovers itself. So the reason I say eat your leftovers from a sustainability standpoint is that a third or approximately a third of all of the food that's produced in the U.S. is wasted. Every year.
Oh, that's so sad. A third. Oh, my God.
It's so much. And the majority of it, the largest portion of it happens at the consumer level. So that's us.
Wow.
So imagine this. I like to paint this picture when I'm talking about food waste is imagine you go grocery shopping and you buy four bags of groceries and you come home, you're really excited and you just throw one of those bags in the trash just right away.
Yeah.
It is equivalent to that. It seems so crazy, right?
But it does, but I believe it.
Think about it. You have high ambitions at the beginning of the week. You're going to make all of these meals and then life runs away from you. It's crazy. You have to pick the kids up from school and then take them to band practice. And it's just so much easier to swing through the drive-thru. And then that bell pepper that you were going to make veggie fajitas with,
it sits
at the back of the fridge. And then you get to the end of the week and it's kind of wrinkly. Maybe there's a spot of mold on it. And you toss it in the trash and it seems like totally innocuous. It's just one bell pepper. You'll do better next week. That's fine. But imagine if 20 million households had one sad bell pepper in the back of their
20 million bell peppers.
Fridge. That's 20 million bell peppers. And that's so much land and water and transportation and packaging that went into producing those bell peppers that are never consumed.
Yeah.
So,
eat
your leftovers. I know. Sorry, that was a bit of a downer. But let me bring it back. I'll end on a more optimistic note with that one. Eat your leftovers. Learn how to store food properly. Mm-hmm. Learn how to use your freezer to store food. If you know you're not going to get to that bell pepper, but can save it before it's wrinkly and moldy, dice it up and toss it in the freezer.
Yeah.
Or throw it into a different recipe this week. This is where these culinary skills really come into play is if you know that, I didn't get to my veggie fajitas, but I'm making a curry tonight. I can just dice this up and toss it into my curry.
And add it in then, just to use it.
Then exactly.
Yeah, I've definitely done that before where I'm like, oh, I just need to use this. And I throw it into a recipe that maybe wasn't intended for, but it's like, it works. And well, now I've got more nutrition. Like I got more vitamins and minerals or whatever it was that it, you know, I just used just to use it, which sounds, because I think that happened one time when my husband was like, you're just going to throw it in there. And I was like, yeah, like, it just needs to, it's either used in the dish, therefore helping our nutrition, or it's useless in the trash. So
exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm just surprised, you know, like going back to how those are two great tips. And it's interesting how, like, with the sustainability piece, you know, it's important for each person to, you know, make decisions that are helpful and impact our lives. But how you mentioned, like, kind of that sustainability really from the big corporations needs to change their policies, procedures, because that's like a big impact. But so super interesting that from the food waste standpoint, that the biggest impact there really is at the consumer level. I was not expecting that.
Yeah. Yeah, we really can have a big influence there as individuals.
Yeah. And I think food, again, this is where I think like just to taste kind of teaching and educating people is so important. You know, people are, I'm using my husband a lot as an example in this one. I'm a little embarrassed, but you know, going back, I mentioned that I grew up with a mother who like cooked and stuff, and he had a very different upbringing than me, and he lived in an apartment with his grandparents, and he didn't, and then, you know, maybe it's the nature of like being a man, like didn't have an interest in it. So like he is the type of person that like if if it says best buy date, or if he's just not sure, he's like, I don't know when I bought that. He actually gets like scared. Like, well, is it still good? I don't know. And might throw it out because he thinks it's not good. So this is another learning thing of like, we need to learn food storage about like expiration dates and or best buy dates. And what does that mean? How to tell if something's gone bad or not. We certainly don't want people eating food that's gone rotten or expired, but like you might be surprised at how well a food can last. Or even something like, I don't know, if it's a hard block of cheese and like, oh, there's a little bit of mold in one corner. Like, okay, like you can cut that corner off and safely eat the rest of it, hopefully soon before the rest of it goes bad. But, you know, I think just like understanding food safety is so important to reduce food waste as well.
Yeah, totally. I think that there's a huge opportunity for education here in terms of food safety.
Yeah.
Whether that's cooking things to the proper temperature, or reheating things to the proper temperature, or cooling things down and putting them in the fridge in the right amount of time. Or again, storing things in certain drawers so that they stay crisp for longer or don't mold as quickly. Yeah, it's all part of the consumer education. And there's a lot of really great resources out there, but it's also something that we try to incorporate in our teaching as well.
Yeah, yeah. I want to throw in one other tip kind of for my listeners. A lot of my listeners being active female athletes, I honestly, I'm just telling them all the time that they need to fuel more and eat more. And so kind of what you were mentioning about, oh, there's food that like we just haven't gotten to, haven't made it yet. Is it going to go bad soon? This is where I've actually told a lot of my clients, like, just like as you're making dinner or prep, like just munch on that as a snack. Like I'm going to go to the bell pepper example. It might feel weird to just munch on a bell pepper. It's like, and I'm not saying that's where, like, don't call it like your snack. You need more fuel than that. But it's the sake of like, just eat it so it doesn't go bad. And you're still going to have your pasta dinner and you're still going to have your snack of your Greek yogurt and granola. But like you just, so many of my clients just need to fuel more. And so just, it doesn't have to always be an intentional meal or snack. You can just like munch on it. And I guess I'm saying that personally too. There's lots of times when I am putting together a dinner and let's say, so this happened the other night with pizza. We were making pizza with pepperoni and black olives and caramelized onions on it, which is kind of a weird combination, but was so delicious.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. We borrowed that idea from a restaurant that we went to. And then we're
always,
like,
always a great thing to do is replicate.
Yeah.
We're like, we can make this at home.
We can make this at home. But it was like the amount of both pepperoni and black olives, this is what happened with it. The amount that like fit on the pizza. And then we had like 10 pieces of pepperoni left and like just a few like black olives. And it's like in that moment, I just literally like just ate the black olives.
Yeah, of course.
It was like, they don't fit on the pizza, but like, I love black olives. I want this nutrition. I am hungry. Like, I know the pizza is going to be done in 15 minutes and I'll eat the pizza, but I'm just going to eat this handful of black olives right now.
Yeah, exactly. I was making, that's funny. I have an olive story too. I was making dinner with my partner a couple of weeks ago and we had bought some smoked Kalamata olives just because they sounded good.
Mm.
And they were called for in the recipe. But as we're making dinner, we were both really hungry. So we're just munching on these olives, which is great because they're a great fat source. And as endurance athletes, we really just need those extra calories, that extra healthy fat. So important for female athletes, especially.
Absolutely. And so, and it's, you know, I think some other nutrition messages might be like, don't snack before your meal. But you understand as an athlete yourself, me, myself, it's like, no, us female athletes, we need more fuel. So, you know, and then it's like, if you didn't have those extra olives, then you might be suffering your own personal nutrition. And then also, like, what if those olives went to waste now? Like, you know, so
it's all connected.
It is. It's all connected. I was seriously last night was like, was it last night? Anyways, with olives, it was just like, I'm just going to eat these. There's no use in saving them. They're not going to get used. They're going to go to waste. And like, I'm hungry. So just do it. And I think we all need to take that approach sometimes. It not only cuts down on food waste, but it's better for us to actually get the calories we need as athletes.
Totally agree. Amazing.
Awesome. Okay, Lexi, I'm just loving this conversation. I know we're on the same page a lot with just how important the culinary aspect and cooking aspect is to accompany our nutrition, our medical, and our fueling needs as athletes too. I think another angle of the importance of culinary skills in nutrition is also honoring like our culture and heritage. And because I know this has been, so I grew up, just a little side story, I grew up in New England, and like, okay, there's a certain way that I grew up. I have an Irish, German, and then a background that's a strong Italian area. So like we're real good with our Italian food up in New England.
Mm-hmm.
But then as a dietitian, I've mostly worked in the South. I've worked in Georgia, Florida, and now Texas. And there's different food culture here. And I, you know, just, it's just interesting. It's like, oh, what I would think, you know, to recommend from a nutrition side for somebody to eat, you know, how I grew up is like maybe not acceptable to somebody of a different heritage, you know, Mexican American here in San Antonio. It's just like, you know, it's just different, right? And I think understanding people's cultural influences and catering to that, we don't want, kind of going back to what you said before, like eating healthy isn't just chicken, rice, broccoli, and boring. It's like this can have ingredients and flavors that you personally connect with or are important to you. So I guess just like how important do you think it is to honor those cultural flavors? And then kind of expanding upon that, there's a lot of like trendy, healthy recipes and stuff. And like, how can you incorporate your culture into something that's trending right now? Like, what if your culture, going off of the topic we were just on, what if your culture is a heavy meat culture?
Yeah.
So how do you have more of a plant forward diet if your culture is like, no, we do barbecue, which is what we do here in Texas, where I am now.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lived in Texas for 5 years.
Yeah. You do barbecue.
For sure. Barbecue and Tex-Mex. It's all over the place there. But just going back to your original question, I mean, honoring culture is so important in the food that we eat. Culture is what defines who we are. It's our roots. It's our heritage. It's what makes interactions between different people so special, especially people of different cultures, is there's a real opportunity to learn from and with one another. And one of the beauties of using a plate model, whether that's the performance plate or at Two Taste, we use our whole life plate. One of the beauties of using a plate model in combination with this base recipe concept is that it truly allows you to incorporate your cultural flavors and global cuisines into your meals. And
yeah.
And again, going back to the culinary skills component of what we teach is if you have the skills to build flavor through a dish, if you know when and how to add spices, spices are one of the largest distinguishing factors between different cuisines. Mm-hmm. So if you want to cook a Moroccan dish, maybe you're using cinnamon and cumin and turmeric and coriander. Or if you want to cook a Mediterranean dish, maybe you're using rosemary and thyme and dill. And so learning when and how to add those different spices and herbs and oils can really take the same ingredients like we were talking about, but transform them in dozens of different ways. Mm-hmm. And going to your point about cuisines that are very meat heavy. So I definitely agree that there are a lot of cuisines that tend to be meat heavy. But interestingly, if you look at a lot of cuisines, the basis of their diet can still be very plant forward. Mm-hmm. And if you learn what spices and seasonings and cooking methods they use to cook their meat, if you're interested in a more plant-forward, plant-centric diet, you can use a lot of those same techniques and spices with beans or tofu or tempeh or seitan, mm-hmm. and still really enjoy the flavors of that cuisine.
Yeah, absolutely. Going based on the flavor, more so, like you can apply the flavor to whatever food it is. And I think going back to your base recipe example, that works perfectly. Like you can still have barbecue flavor without necessarily having barbecued meats. And
right.
And we're not saying you can also have barbecued meats, but it's just like if that's the flavors you love, it's interesting to make a barbecue veggie bowl or something like that and see what comes of it. And it's really fun to explore.
And on your point of trending recipes and how do we incorporate different cuisines or cultural flavors into trending recipes, just speaking personally from our website, we noticed the TikTok wrap trend. Did you see this?
No.
We're not on TikTok, but we're on Instagram.
Yeah. And they cross over.
Right. There's this trend of this wrap where you take a tortilla and you cut a slit into a quarter of it, and then you add toppings on each quadrant, and then you kind of fold it up on itself, mm-hmm. and then you pan sear it. So it's kind of like this wrap quesadilla thing.
Yeah.
Which is, it's pretty fun.
Sounds good.
But we decided to make a base recipe out of this because we watched this video and we're like, oh, you could do a million things with this.
Yeah.
You could make a Tex-Mex version and have guacamole and shredded chicken and cheese and pico and fold that up and make it. Or you could have a Mediterranean version and do hummus and roasted bell pepper and leafy greens and whatever else. And so you can take this one recipe and make it dozens of different ways. Again, honoring whatever flavors are most exciting to you or most important to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You are making me hungry.
I know. Me too.
This has been such a great conversation. I think a takeaway I really want to give to our listeners, besides checking out To Taste, heading to their website, following them on Instagram, seeing if they can be of service to you. But just a huge takeaway is just really that investing in the kitchen and in cooking and honoring flavors and allowing taste to be a driving reason for your food choice can enhance your nutrition, your health, your wellness, your performance. And I again, coming from a place that so many people are focused on health and maybe almost scared to enjoy food, maybe almost thinking, well, I don't want to like it too much because I don't want to eat too much of it. It's like, this conversation is proof that you are meant to enjoy your food. You are meant to taste it and enjoy it and savor it. That can actually enhance your nutrition, enhance your health. And so go for taste and enjoy food for its taste. Is that a good summary? Yeah. Do you have anything to add to that?
That was a perfect summary. I'm so glad that I was able to convey that message.
You were.
And yes, food, nutrition, food aside from nutrition is such a pleasure. It's such an asset in our lives from a performance standpoint, but also from a connection standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, from history, from science. There's so much embedded in food. And if we can learn to enjoy food from whatever perspective that we bring to the table, I think there's a real opportunity to improve our relationship with it and potentially with others as well.
Yeah. And I feel like this is such a good place to end this podcast. However, I'm going to be awkward and continue it because I just had this other light bulb moment.
Amazing. Just,
knowing you are an athlete yourself and an endurance athlete, it also reminded me just of like, have you experienced in your life, Lexi, after, you know, a long event or a big training or something, like not being hungry or not even wanting food because that exercise can suppress your appetite or just kind of turn you off. Maybe you're still dehydrated. And I it was just that light bulb moment of like, this is another reason why exploring flavors is so important, because as an athlete, you might find like, oh, I just like really like that flavor turns me off during a run, but like lime. I want lime right now. And like to go mm-hmm. with that, you know, I don't know if you have any examples of that or any commentary to add, but.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is that as athletes, we develop a really interesting skill of intuition of saying, oh, this sounds really good to me right now. I've had it where at the end of a long run, I want Fruity Pebbles. That's what I'm craving. But I know that that's not necessarily going to deliver all the nutrients that I need, but I can kind of break it down and say, oh, you know what I'm actually craving is carbohydrates mm-hmm. and hydration and citrus. And citrus. I know I can get that from a really satisfying smoothie. And so yeah. That's what I'm going to go towards. And I can also get some protein in there to help my muscles recover. But yeah, having the skill of identifying what our bodies want and then being able to make it. I run with a lot of friends who are like, oh, that sounds good, but I don't want to make it. But that is like the thing I look forward to most yeah. after getting home from a long run is, you know, turning my blender on or throwing some sourdough into the toaster mm-hmm. to really replenish my stores. So yeah, learning how to adjust flavors to what our bodies want and need.
Yeah. And I think you highlighted too something, maybe you're looking for citrus. And I just, that is so common in our endurance sports. We're looking for refreshing or salty, like it just craving chips. And it's like, this is a sign of what your body needs. You need electrolytes. You need some more hydration. You need something refreshing. And then we're craving sweets because we need more carbohydrates. We just need more carbs and sugar ultimately to, you know, refuel our muscles. And again, this is trust that your body is craving what it needs and allow yourself to be creative. So if you really want those chips, go ahead and get those chips and pair it with a good sandwich to get more of the calories and nutrients that you need. But go ahead and say yes to those chips. Or yeah, you're craving citrus. Make this awesome recovery smoothie that's citrusy and refreshing. And then you're hitting, you know, you're checking the box with hydration too. And yeah, so anyways, we could have ended the podcast 5 minutes ago, but I was like, this is like another topic just to expand upon here. So.
Totally. Obviously, you and I can talk about food and nutrition and sports all day. I'm sure we have other things to get to, but yeah, it's been so fun talking to you about all of these things. And I hope that something that we talked about resonates with your audience and that they can find ways to incorporate cooking into their lives to improve their relationship with food and enhance their performance.
Totally. Well, thank you so much, Lexi. We appreciate you and all that you are doing to help people fuel better and lead nourished lives with the power of good tasting food.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie, please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new coaches toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.